At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Ha! Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my shirt. My plantation, my plantation, my plantation. Ah, plantain, 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 plantain.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the soccer edition. This is your host, Mitch. As usual, I'm here with Mateus. Hey, Mateus, how's it going?
Don't mind me, guys. I'm just walking my dog. His name is Mexico. You know, going on a little stroll.
Also here, Emily. Hi, Emily. How are you?
I'm doing well. I can't beat that intro, so...
Yeah, hey. I don't think either of us can. So let's just get right into it. The U.S. are the kings of CONCACAF once again. We own this federation. Can't wait to get some new rivals this summer in Copa America. Since the last time we recorded, we've played two Nations League matches here in this international break. I'd say different vibes around each one would be an understatement. Let's start out talking about the Nations League semifinals. The U.S., you know, on paper, we won 3-1 against Jamaica. That's a pretty nice scoreline right there. But we conceded 6 seconds in this game, like really fucking fast in this game. And then did not tie it up until the last kick of regulation. So needless to say, a little bit of a nervy 90 minutes. There was points in this game where I'm like, I do not think we win this game. I did not think we were going to be able to pull it out and win it. And you know what? We almost did it. Mateus, what did you think about the first 90 minutes against Jamaica?
I mean, I didn't – like, it's easy to criticize it when you look at the score. And I think you can criticize the players, right? I think there was a lot of chances that were left unfinished. I think Malik Tillman had a golden chance that he totally scuffed. I think Balo fed in Pulisic and totally missed one. I think there was a lot of blame to put on – players in certain moments, but I think the tactical setup was all right. I think that we created chances, we just didn't make the final pass or put the ball in the net really for like 90 fucking minutes, which is insanely frustrating. And like, to be honest, I really believe we were gonna win up until the 94th minute and 30th second, and then I gave up. I was like, we're in, fuck, 30 seconds left, we're not gonna fucking score. And then we fucking scored a 96 minute off like some bullshit own goal crossheader. I mean, I don't want to put too much blame on like anybody for the goal like in the 40th second, right? Conceding that one. I think that was just like a weird throw in and a really good routine by Jamaica. And overall, Jamaica defended well for the rest of the game. Like, I don't they weren't amazing, they weren't bad. It was an okay game. As far as like our general run of play, we just got really lucky that we've you know made it through the second, you know, second phase of the game, you know, the extra time, and then after extra time, Gio kind of cooked and fed in Haji right twice, and it was beautiful. So all smiles, I guess. Like a credit to the players for staying focused, staying in the game. Upon like watching and rewatching, I don't think there's anything to get like crazy upset. I know people were calling for Greg's head because, oh, how could he do this? But like, it's not like we ever felt in danger for the rest of the game, other than that one time that Chris Richards fucked up and like almost let in Sivas on goal. Like it was more about individual mistakes and like a tactical fuck up or anything. There was consistent pressure throughout the game. We were getting chances to run in at them. It just wasn't really being converted, right? So I don't know what you think, Emily, at all.
When I was watching, I was actually blaming you guys because I was remembering when you were talking about the roster and the possible midfield, you're like, everyone's playing so well. Like, this is just going to be it. We're going to make Mexico our bitch, like, which, you know, eventually happened. But that's what I was thinking the whole time. Gio Reyna, what a player.
Yeah, what a player. I mean, I think when he got subbed on at halftime, we immediately looked better. Because he's just that kind of player that can like make that kind of impact. It was a very attacking substitution from Greg, because I think did he come on for Scally? I'm pretty sure he came on for Scally or something like that.
He came on for Scally, and then McKennie moved to right back is what happened, which is a little crazy from Greg, but like nothing insane.
Yeah, there was definitely some weird choices made within the game. You mentioned people calling for Greg's head. I feel like any time we do anything, people are going to call for Greg's head. There are people calling for Greg's head after we beat Mexico in the final and lifted our third Nations League in a row. So, like, I don't think there's a lot that he can do to, like, get in the good graces of some fans at this point. And, you know, I have been very vocal about not being his biggest fan. The freaks that hate him kind of make me like him, because they can't criticize him without being fucking weirdos about it.
We will get to that later. We will get to that later, one certain Senor Marsh, too.
Yeah, for sure. back to the game. It was one of those situations where I think Jamaica, from the get-go, weren't going to be like, it wasn't going to be a back and forth game. Like, they weren't going to try to have a dominant amount of possession. We talked about this last week, where this Jamaica squad they're missing some big names. They aren't at full strength. This is not their A team because of players missing. And it just happened to be that they scored 40 seconds in, and it completely changes the game state of the game. It reminds me a lot of the Arsenal game from last season against Bournemouth and Southampton, where we conceded super early against teams who didn't want the ball to begin with. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, great, we can feel super fucking comfortable camping behind the ball, because that was our plan from the get-go. And now we have a 1-0 lead to just start the game, which is the best situation you can possibly have as a team that's not going to be dominant in possession and not going to dominate a game in general. And it's like, okay, cool, the ball's in your court now. You have to break us down. We're going to have 10 men behind the ball. You have to do something about it. And we eventually were able to do something about it. You can call that goal in the 96th minute a little bit fluky, but it was an earned goal. Like, we played really well. You put the ball in those kinds of positions all game. It's going to come off someone's head and it's going to get into the goal. And then you're at an even game state again. It's the 0th minute when it starts extra time. And then all of a sudden we're in control again, because we have the players like Gio Reyna who can just take the game by the scruff of the neck and just do those kinds of things that like win us this game 3-1 and not like a nervy 2-1 or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah. One player I will acutely call out as being bad in the Jamaica game is my sweet, sweet boy, Yunus Musa. I don't want to see him play the six ever again. I love him. We know how press resistant he is. We know how he can turn and dribble with the ball. And we know he's fasting to it. You know, it's Ramadan. It was before sunset in Dallas. But my man, he was missing some really easy passes really, really, really badly. And we just have the players. I know Adams was hurt. Obviously, he came on and got subbed off. And then Johnny Cardoso was also coming into camp hurt, got subbed on for Adams later because of the minutes restriction. But I don't need him playing the six, like, ever. Like, get someone else in. Get Chris Richards in there playing six. He can pass the ball. But Musa needs to be at the eight and dribbling and not really having to turn and pass, please, for love of God.
I think my rebuttal to that would be that I think last year in the Nations League, Musa played a lot of six. And I think it was maybe a little bit more of a pivot with McKennie when he was doing that. And he looked a little bit more comfortable, but he's shown the ability to be able to do it before. So, like, I'm not willing to be like, oh, Musa can't play the six. He should never play there for the national team again. I think that it's a position that he can develop into. He's still only like 20, 21. Like he's still a very, very young player. And I think that right now he's a better eight, but by no means am I writing off the potential of Musa being a long-term six, both for club and country.
Yeah, I just think we have at least two better options there, right? And I get that Johnny and Adams were totally both hurt. Yeah, yeah. And then I just, what does he do well? I think it's the turning and dribbling, right? And I think that's not the responsibility you want from the six 98% of the time, unless we're playing like a really, like, he's like the second guy to double pivot or something. I don't want to call him out. I don't want to, because he's nice. He's good. He's so sweet. He's great at soccer. He just, it's not his position right now. Anyway.
Yeah. Not exactly going to throw him under the bus for a poor game out of position. Yeah, 100%. I'm sure that played a huge role in how he played. You mentioned Tyler Adams and Johnny Cardozo both being subbed on. I think Tyler was subbed on not with the thought process of we're going to be playing 120 minutes, because you don't really do that with a guy on a minutes restriction, because he ended up being subbed off in extra time. He was decent. I think I saw a lot of people before the final wanting Johnny to be the starter at the six, because I think he was very sharp when he came on as well. He's a great player. I fucking love watching Johnny Cardozo. He is a really, really, really good player. Do you think that he is a like fully established six at this point? Because I know that your opinion for a long time was that he was not a six either.
Yeah, so I think he is. I think watching him at Betis, I think he's done that role. I think he's playing in a double pivot a little bit more, but he's definitely the most defensively responsible player at Betis when Guido Rodriguez isn't playing. And I think him and Tyler Adams had different qualities, right? I think Tyler's more of a dog, right? He's the like just this all-out defender. He's like going to win every headed ball, even though he's like not even that tall of a guy. He's going to press the like living shit out of anybody that comes near him. And Johnny's like a more cover shadow oriented guy. Like, yes, he will go in and tackle somebody, but he gets turned a little bit easier. What you get in exchange for that is that he's like really, really good at maintaining tempo and finding the easy passes and keeping like the game calm and steady under pressure. And so there are two different qualities, right? Tyler has some passing range, but he's not like this tempo maestro that Johnny is like sort of developing and becoming really quickly at Betis. And so I think depending on our opponent, depending on game state, one player might be better than the other, but I think they're both pretty equal candidates for me in terms of being able to play that six at this point. I know that's a little bit controversial because I'm a big Johnny fan. I think people are attached to Tyler Adams. He's a really big leader in the locker room. And so it's going to take a lot to displace him in that team against the big opponent, as it should. But I'm perfectly comfortable with Johnny starting just about every game. And the same with Adams. Like, I think it's like a really 1A, 1B type situation that I'm very happy to have. It's a very good problem to have, I'd say.
Absolutely. Fully agree with that. I don't feel like we've given enough flowers in this game to Gio Reyna, because I do think that he fully was the reason that we won this. Emily, can you wax lyrical about Gio Reyna? Talk about the greatness of Gio Reyna?
I'm not sure if I can. how long ago was the Jamaica game?
It was last Thursday.
Do you know how many soccer games I've watched since then?
That's a bit, okay. Fair enough.
We've watched since then, Emily. God damn it.
I don't know. I don't know if it's the same number.
Okay. I'll take it then. And then we could talk about Gio Reyna in the Mexico game, because it's also a great performance from him there. But the way that he is able to, I think the way that he has developed as a player is really impressive too, because one of the goals that he created against Jamaica, he wins the ball back defensively. And then he finds the pass to Haji right immediately. And that kind of play is something that shows his maturity as a player, how much he's growing. He's like being able to play more in these pockets and have a little bit more of defensive responsibility, which is what you need to survive as a creative player in the modern game, because the 10 kind of doesn't exist for many teams anymore. So you need to be able to like have some defensive responsibility, win the ball back, which is what he's shown himself capable to do, and then also find the incisive pass. And it's just, he is such a fantastic player. He's and that performance against Jamaica will now segue into the Mexico game because he had two assists. He kind of changed the game. So naturally, he started against Mexico. Also, Hockey Wright, he scored two goals in this game. Credit to him. He got the start against Mexico. I didn't think he was fantastic against Mexico, but after you score two goals in the semifinals, I completely understand rewarding him with a start. However, Haji, you just scored a brace for the national team. Celebrate, dude. What's with this cool collected little thing that, like, he scored a second goal and just, like, didn't give a shit? Come on, man. Celebrate your fucking goals for your national team. But let's move on to the Mexico game. We won by a familiar scoreline, 2-0. Great performance from the team. Mateus, what did you think about the final?
I mean, like, we came out and we just kind of, like, controlled it. I think there wasn't a single time in the game, like, in even in previous, like, wins against Mexico, like, where the game gets, like, scrappy and dirty and, like, kind of messy. There's beers everywhere. I think the team, the Mexican team, and the Mexican fans in the crowd were just kind of sitting down and, like, taking it all game. Like, there wasn't really any fight from them. I think we just kind of possessed the game. It was very calm. I don't think there was any time in the game where I felt that we were troubled, even as we weren't scoring in the first half. We got that early chance that Memo defended from Pulisic pretty early on. A nice pass from Gio, by the way. But then Tyler Adams rifles that one home right before the stroke of halftime. Also cool, calm, and collected for about 3 seconds before he breaks out into a huge smile. I mean, that's a, a worldie. That's a really, really, really nice rifling shot.
That is one of those goals that I have been, like, every single time I've seen it pop up on my Twitter timeline, I watch it again and I just, like, start giggling because it's just, like, so, such a sick goal. Just like, on a just fucking line drive. Unbelievable. Like, I was watching at my parents' house and I, like, screamed and ran up and down my parents' house. My parents' dog was barking at me. It was great. It was quite the fucking goal. And before that, it was a lot of control from the U.S., but it wasn't, like, a lot of great chances. And then Tyler goes and does that, and it was pretty much home free from there.
And the reverse angle of him calling for the ball, I don't know if you've seen it, but he's, like, starfishing to Weston McKennie. Like, pass me the fucking ball. Like, he knew he was going to bang that one in. And apparently he's given some interviews where he's saying, like, yeah, I've been hurt for a year. I've just been shooting. That's, like, all he's been doing training. So he's like, I'm practicing it, I guess. Like, because that's not something that was known to be in his locker. I don't remember him scoring with that at, like, Leipzig at all. So
I mean, he hasn't scored for the national team in, like, since, like, 2018,
like in Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. Senor Mar said he's never seen him hit a ball like that. So
I mean, given that Jesse Marsh was his coach at a couple of clubs, that makes sense. He's seen a lot in training. While we're on the topic, we want to talk about Jesse Marsh.
What a transition.
Chronologically, it makes sense, right? Because he just starts shitting on the team at halftime for, like, no real fucking reason. Like, him and Charlie Davies are just like, oh, why is Gio dropping back to get the ball in possession? I don't know, because he's a fucking good player. Like, sorry, that happens in 2024 when you play soccer. And just kind of like when you score a banger like that, right? When you're going to halftime, right before the stroke of halftime, your captain, right, scores a amazing shot from, like, 35 yards out. And then, like, your talking point is like, oh, the coach's tactics are sad. Give me a fucking break, dude. Why be such a hater? Maybe it's because you want the job and you won't say it. Is that why? Are you being a little piss baby? Like, grow up. Like, what is it? Like, this unnecessary feud, like, completely unnecessary feud.
I mean, I don't know if I would say unnecessary, because I understand from Jesse's perspective why he would be salty. I don't enjoy his saltiness. And I don't think that the Mexico game was necessarily granted. I think that the main tactical criticism I have of Greg Berhalter's U.S. teams have been lack of chance creation in the final third, lack of goal scoring. We scored five goals this window, so we can't fully complain about that. But I think that was something that you could pull at halftime, especially prior to Tyler's shot, is that we controlled the game well. I don't know if we created all that many chances. And I think that's, like, the biggest thing that I want to see from the national team is more chance creation. And so, you know, if you're just looking at this blindly, you see our biggest creator, Gio Reyna, dropping a lot deeper to receive the ball. I think he did a really good job of that and was able to receive the ball deeper and then also go and try to create chances. But in just the conversation about around Jesse Marsh, it just all comes around really salty. Yeah, Dean said in the comments, this was more of a Jesse didn't read the room thing. Yeah, I think so. I think even if there are tactical deficiencies in that half, after that kind of goal by Tyler Adams to take the lead, I don't know if there's much room for you to be like super critical about the team where you won't be seen as kind of salty. Where it's like, yeah, this is a job that you were on paper of wanting, and now you're just kind of shitting on the team. Dean S. where ran the goal about on U.S. men's national team gold. I think it might be my favorite. It's a final against Mexico. It's crazy. That's a crazy shot.
I think you got to put a few World Cup goals on there. I think Landon versus Algeria. I think it's top 10. It's top 10 for me.
Pulisic hurting his dick to score a goal is pretty iconic in terms of U.S. men's national team moments.
Yeah.
Scoring a World Cup goal and like hurting your own dick is pretty crazy. And that's at least a top five U.S. men's national team goal just because it's the World Cup.
I like the man in the mirror one where he's shitting on Ochoa. I think that one's nice a couple years ago or a few years ago.
That was cringe.
That was 2021.
Maybe the celebration was cringe. I don't remember the goal.
I think it was cold. It was cold.
Was it a penalty?
I think it was a penalty.
Yeah. Whatever. Man in the mirror.
Celebrations were good.
Hey, it was talking shit about Ochoa, and Ochoa hasn't been able to do shit since he made those comments about the man in the mirror.
We just had their Christian's fucking number. Goal.
But Mexico also hasn't scored a goal on us in like 2 years, so like
that is kind of
really
crazy.
Chat shit anymore. Yeah, we've just been purely dominating them. It's been awesome.
I think we should also mention the second goal as well later in the match. Very nice finish.
Yeah, 100%. No, I was going to talk about it. I've been talking up Gio so much, I wasn't going to ignore the goal that he scored. I do want to give credit to Christian Pulisic because that, like, the dribble over a Mexican player to get there was fucking sick. It was so cool. And then Gio's in the right place at the right time to be able to finish that off, and then the game's over at Dos Aceros. Mexico wasn't doing shit. They had a penalty shout late in the game. VAR looked at it. And honestly, fucking impressive from Anthony Robinson to have that kind of kick and not make contact. There was no contact whatsoever with the Mexican player. Complete dive. They did not get a penalty. It was great. And the game ends Dos Aceros, which we cannot complain about.
I think the yellow for simulation as well was very nice to see. I had a very fun time seeing that get pulled out. It was very salt in the wound in a very pleasing way for me. So you don't see those get given. And that one was well deserved.
Yeah, that one felt good. That one felt really, really good.
I do have a question.
What's up?
What do you think is going to happen if they when they pull up the chant at the World Cup?
So I was going to bring up the chant. Because the Mexican fans started losing and then they started being babies and started doing the chant that's homophobic, and the game gets suspended and then the game gets playing again and then it gets suspended again. And I don't think that these are fucking real punishments for them to stop doing it, because the team's already losing. The game's already done. I think it would have been more of a punishment if they suspended the game. The clock is still running. It hits 90 minutes, and they're like, cool, blow the final whistle. Game's over. Congratulations, fans. You guys fucked your team over. You made a real impact on the game in a negative way. I think that is how that is an example of, like, how you actually fucking punish it. Instead of, like, stopping the game for 6 minutes, the time keeps running, and then you add that on into stoppage time. You're not actually making any difference. You're just, if anything, giving the players a break for 6 minutes and then continuing to play the game. There's no actual punishment that will, like, there's no things that will actually stop it until there's genuine, like, sanctions and punishments, or it's like, don't allow Mexican fans to their next two games, or, like, you know, this team's fucking hosting a World Cup. Like,
well,
Take away host matches.
The thing is, FIFA doesn't care at all. And if anything, FIFA is a homophobic, entity.
We did just have a World Cup in Qatar. And this is a tournament. The CONCACAF Nations League is sponsored by Qatar Airways. We're so deep in this shit.
And it's like, if we ban fans, like, this game is on U.S. soil. Like, how are you going to, like, you can't have, how are you going to identify who's a Mexico fan anyways when you're buying tickets or whatever? Like, I think the only way to, like, well, like, do any sort of, like,
discriminatory practices.
Yeah, exactly. And like literally, I think the only way to do this is, like, you know, cameras, and like how they do it in England is like, oh, you're the one doing the chant, here's a $50 fine or whatever. Or like, I don't, but then there's going to be like some kind of like First Amendment bullshit that they're going to sue CONCACAF for on U.S. ground. I don't, like, there's not an easy way to do this. And I really feel like I feel bad for CONCACAF in a way, because like, this is, they just see the Mexican fans or the people that are doing this, not just the Mexican fans, the annoying people who are doing this are just, it just see as petty, right? They're not even trying to be homophobic. They're just being petty and annoying over this, I think, right? I don't think that's how the fans see it.
To me, it's like one of those things, if we didn't care so much, like, they would stop.
Yeah, exactly. But like, if you don't address it at all, it's also going to keep happening too.
Yeah.
Then, like, what's the response, right?
So I mean, prime example is that they were not doing it the entire game until they went down 2-0 at the very end, and then like, all right, fuck it, now let's make this about ourselves, and because you could just do that, and stopping the game for it almost rewards the fans in a way, because it's like, you guys were doing something that, like, we're now acknowledging. And it's not exactly punishing anyone in any way. So it's performative at best, but also you can't you can't give the U.S. a penalty every time they do it. Cause like,
that'd be sick.
That's actually what I was going to say, is like, that's the one way I can think of doing it, is just giving the U.S. penalty after penalty.
But this would be like, you can't make a specific rule for Mexico.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah,
I guess you could make a rule of, like, if your fan base is like, doing some kind of racist, homophobic, discriminatory behavior, like grant the other team a PK.
Yeah, I mean, but, like, in a game like this, it's very clear who is yelling the thing in Spanish, which is U.S. and Mexican fans. If this chant is happening for like a U.S. Panama or Mexico Panama game, you're not gonna like know whose fans are doing it, because it's both Spanish speaking countries.
Let's analyze the accent.
But also who's to say is like, that's not U.S. fans speaking Spanish are doing it too, right? Yep.
That's a good point.
It is a very simple word to say.
Yeah,
phonetically it's very easy to say.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a tough situation because it's like, not sure like where we want to go with it. I think it's a conversation that we have to have around this, especially when it happened so prominently at the end of this game. But it was very disappointing. Back to the positives, the U.S. won the Nations League for the third straight time. We're the only fucking winners of the CONCACAF Nations League, which is very fun. I do like that we are like, we've decided that like, okay, Nations League is going to be our tournament. Because I never really cared all enough for the Gold Cup anyway, so I'm very okay with us rolling out MLS teams for it. And it works better with like our European players' schedules. So like, and other countries are taken seriously too. That was Mexico's A team. So I think it's created a very, very good competition. And to quote Anthony Robinson, I want us to win it until we're bored of winning it. Like, want us to keep winning this tournament forever. It's great.
Until the point that when we lose it, that's when Greg Berhalter gets fired. I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, fair enough. Do you have any thoughts on Mexico before we move on to the NWSL?
I mean, I was thinking about their 11 earlier, and I don't think there's anybody in their 11 besides maybe Edson Alvarez who gets into our team, like, full stop. Chucky Lozano's not getting in that team. I don't know any of the center backs. Maybe Vasquez gets in their team at center back. maybe that's a stretch. None of the fullbacks are, you know, Araujo maybe on a backup. Like, I don't want to say it's not a rivalry because it's not at that point yet, but it's trending in that direction where they're just kind of our dogs. I'm more scared of a full strength Jamaica than I am of a full strength Mexico at this point, almost.
Wow.
Really. Like if Leon Bailey gets hot, I'm more scared than like any player Mexico has for sure. So
I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of with you there.
they're not going to develop anyone that's going to scare. I mean, Santi Jimenez maybe like in a few years, but like, there's no one in the pipeline. All of the best youth players that they have are also dual nats with us. And I'm going to talk about Fidel Barajas later when we talk about MLS, but like, even he's like switching to the US, maybe they're kind of fucked until they start selling some players here or developing something at home. It's a very insular market in Liga MX, and they need to stop doing that. They need to sell players abroad. So
yeah, they've kind of hit a ceiling, and I think the US has progressed past them, and it's been great to see. I love being this in depth where we're just running them instead of the other way around, which is how it was for so fucking long. Before we leave US men's national team, I want to ask, after this tournament, what your expectations are for Copa America this summer.
I think we talked about this before, but like, just if we lose to Brazil, if we lose Argentina, or if we lose to, I don't know, not Uruguay. Yeah. It's really, we got to bow out to one of the big dogs. I know, or win the thing. Fuck it. But probably bow out to Brazil, Argentina, and I'd be okay with that. Anybody else, I'm kind of starting to get upset. Semis or bust.
I think with the tournament being held in the U.S., semifinals needs to be the expectation. Unless something happens where we get drawn against Argentina in the quarters. But like, if the group stage goes as planned, we shouldn't be drawn against Argentina or Brazil in the quarters. So like, I think the expectation should be the semifinals, especially with the tournament being hosted here. Because, you know, when you host a tournament, it's the expectation that all these are home games and you should have an advantage because of that. Well, it remains to be seen, but I'm very excited for the tournament this summer. I'm going to one of the games. It's going to be great. Let's move on to NWSL.
I got a thing real quick. Shout out to the US U19s beating England, and shout out to the US U23s tying France in the past few days.
Wow, the future
winning
is
the
bright.
Olympics too. Let's go. Come on. All right, let's move on to the NWSL. We're going to run through all the scores of the games real quick before we go in depth. Orlando and Angel City drew 1-1. Utah beat North Carolina for their first win in the new Royals era. The Red Stars beat the Reign 2-1. Spirit beat Bay FC 2-1. Dash and Louisville drew 0-0. Wave lost to KC 2-1. And Thorns lost to Gotham 1-0. A lot of 2-1s as I'm reading through that. let's start in San Diego, where the Wave hosted KC and fell 2-1. What do you think, Emily?
Yeah, I mean, this was pretty clear from the beginning of the game that the Wave. Oh, you want to, Emily?
No.
Go. You start talking. Go.
No, the Wave wanted to possess the ball the whole game while the Current are hitting on the counter, looking to go to Chiwenga and be in transition. The Wave go up quickly first off a corner. Jacobson. Danish, maybe?
Swedish.
Fuck. All right. Well, sorry to my Scandinavian listeners. score a crappy one, or a scrappy one off a corner. Addy French probably has to do better there, maybe a little bit, but goes in the net, whatever. Then for the Current in transition, Rodriguez scores one off a quick turn, hits off a leg, jumps over Sheridan. Kind of unlucky for Sheridan, pretty tough. French comes up with a big save in the second half against Alex Morgan, with like a really big looping ball from McCaskill. Alex Morgan puts in a nice finish, and French goes really big, so good on her for redeeming herself for the first goal. And then Bia wins a penalty, where she just kind of takes on a one-on-one at the side edge of the box, goes to VAR, which is kind of crazy because it was a pretty clear penalty. But then Lola Bonta slots the penalty home. Big away win. I don't know. It was kind of crazy for the Current. Shout out to Vlatko, I guess.
I want to say that
he joined you in the celebration police.
Oh, yeah.
So it's exciting.
my brother in arms. Yeah, he's so lame for apparently he told the team, like, let's be humble and like let's dip. Let's just take this W and go home. Which I don't know if that essentially means like don't celebrate like the way that you usually do, but I guess it did because Lola Bonta did not break out one of her signature sellies after hitting that pen, which is so lame. And he's really on a mission to take the fun out of football here in America after destroying the national team program.
The flip the ball to the ref stuff, like the football style, like, oh, just that doesn't, soccer's not like that. It's never been like that. So I don't know what this is really coming from whatsoever.
Yeah, if he's going to make Lola Bonta not celebrate, then I'm going to be a full-on Blacko hater this season. Maybe she will when she scores at home. But if this is a continual thing where Lo keeps scoring and she's not celebrating, I'm a full-on Antonovsky hater.
I think she'll celebrate at home, but I wouldn't say Chwinga, like, she's scary. Like, I think the current are always going to be in the game if, like, they can just get a ball over the top to her. She was really unlucky not to score yet. And I'm scared to play them, kind of, after saying that, you know, in our preview of that. I didn't think they were going to be, you know, all that, but I stand corrected so far.
All right, so we have it here. The KC Current are back. They're back this season. Let's move on now to the Portland Thorns hosted your Gotham FC, and it did. It went your way.
by like the, what's it called when it's like it's really
the
close?
Skin of your teeth.
The skin of your teeth, that's exactly, which is such an odd phrase, but we won't dissect that now. Wow, that was terrifying to watch. Juan Carlos Almaraz loves to play like a really high line, which obviously when Sophia Smith is on the other team is terrifying. And she got in so many times. Twice she had the ball in the back of the net, and luckily VAR, and we held, you know, discipline line. So luckily VAR called those back as they should have been. But really, like, you're going to stop Sophia Smith, you have to foul her to death. You have to depend on VAR to make the right calls. And you have to have a really disciplined back line.
Moving on. No, not moving on.
No, sorry. I thought I was echoing my headphones.
No, you're good. Keep going.
Okay, great. Anyway, it was a very different performance from Portland than when they got absolutely housed last week, which I figured they would put out a different back line, which they did. But I think Gotham, we like had a game plan and we stuck to it. And had very good defensive showing. Sam Hyatt, who made her debut, she won 9 duels, made 15 clearances. Cassie Miller made 6 saves. She was huge and kept us in the game. And then Astaire, like, she's so clinical. We need to do a better job of finding her in the box because she doesn't need, like, many chances at all.
Yeah, I mean, good win on the road for the Bats. Yeah. Let's move on now to Washington. They beat Bay FC 2-1. Mateus, what did you think?
I, you know, we could talk about the game, but I'm just going to talk about Oshawala because she looked dangerous as hell all the goddamn time, especially through the first 60 minutes, just like getting in behind, playing balls in the behind, looking like De Bruyne is like a men's comparison I could think of, but like just like incredibly dangerous feeding balls in. And finishing herself, she gets an assist early, cutting one back to Dorian Bailey in the 10th minute, who hammers one, bangs another one off the crossbar. The Washington defense looked like pretty porous for the first like 30 minutes of the game, I'd say. But they settle in after Hirschfeld scores a fucking screamer over Pruhl. Pruhl, am I saying that right, Emily? Pruhl?
Pruhl.
Pruhl.
Pruhl. You don't pronounce Pruhl. The L, I don't think.
Whatever. Belgian,
French Canadian is it's all sorts of weird.
Quebecois, I don't know. Anyway, Hirschfeld banger, nice celebration, with Trinity Rodman looking very happy. And the Bay FC, like, counter-press looking sharp for the rest of the game. And then Bethune in the second half had, like, a zillion chances. Hitting one off the crossbar, hitting one right at Kingsbury. Eventually, or not Kingsbury, Pruel again.
My bad.
And finally, slots home in stoppage time. 2-1 win for the Spirit.
Literally last minute. Yeah.
I know.
She was like heating up like a video game, Bethune. I think she's gonna be a great player.
The Gatorade, the 2K Gatorade effect.
She was charging.
Anything else from this game, Emily?
I thought it was pretty even. I think Bay, yeah, probably unlucky, maybe not to get a point, because they defended pretty well. But good win for the Spirit, their first win. I like when teams like don't win twice in a row, you know, that aren't my team. Keeps everybody even. Keeps the table even.
Yeah,
for sure. Good result.
Even though Gotham and San Diego have played one less game than everyone else, okay. It keeps everyone else even. Let's move on now to Utah 2. They got their first win of the season against North Carolina, who had a crushing win last week and then lost to an expansion team this week.
What a perfect league. They started off with a goal off a corner kick from Kate Delfava, who she was actually drafted out of Utah. So she found her way back there in the expansion draft, which is nice. So she got her first goal, got the Utah's first goal back in the league. Although this goal was like pretty hilarious in the XG rating. Utah only created 0.17 and North Carolina had 3.14, which by the end you'll know why, because there was chaos in the second half. But like 10 minutes later, Ashley Sanchez equalized with a pretty nice goal off a deflection in the box. And then like 5 minutes later, number one draft pick, Ali Setnor, she was like driving out the pitch. No one steps to her. She sends a missile in the back of the net. Showed why she was the number one pick. I can't wait for Utah maybe to trade her next season or like a bunch of other good players. We'll see where she lands. And then second half, there were like two penalties called within like the span of like 2 minutes. Malia Berkeley, who I think she scored a penalty last week. She stepped up. She's a center back. She hits the post and then off the rebound. They called another penalty after a collision. She steps up again for the penalty, which I don't know, probably not wise. And then she goes the other way. Mandy Hott saves it. She's still living off the NWSL championship final from last season. Still magic in the gloves. And North Carolina loses.
Yeah, tough result for them.
Kind of tough. I think for them, like, they continue to play the way that they played, even though they were going for a goal. Like, very patient possession. I think on most days it probably would work out for them. They just couldn't find one. So they'll be fine, I think.
Fair. Let's move on now to MLS. And this is the last week that we have to cover MLS with Scabs, because the real refs are coming back. This is very, very exciting. There was a vote today, or was it today? Yeah, it came out this morning that the refs are coming back next weekend. They have a new agreement signed with Pro and MLS. We don't have to deal with these fucking Scabs anymore. When bad decisions happen, these people are being paid well now. So that makes me feel better when I chant at them at Rapids games. Let's go through
Well, I was going to say, and now the linesmen also make a living wage. That's also nice.
It's lovely. We love living wages on this podcast. Let's run through all of the MLS scores before we get started. New England, Chicago drew 1-1. Red Bulls won 4-0 over Inter Miami. Cincy beat NYCFC 1-0. Vancouver lost to RSL 2-1. Orlando gets the first win of the season, 2-0 over Austin. Charlotte wins 2-0 over Columbus. Toronto wins 2-0 over Atlanta. St. Louis and DC drew 2-2. KC lost 3-2 to LA Galaxy. Colorado lost 1-0 to Houston. LAFC won 5-0 against Nashville. Portland lost 3-1 against Philadelphia, and San Jose won 3-2 against the Seattle Sounders. And we're going to start talking about MLS in Vancouver, where they lost to Fake Salt Lake. Tell me about it, Matthias.
Fake Salt Lake, that's tough. They were real this game. Vancouver played the way they always play, which is, you know, the Vanni Sartini, not quite heavy metal football, just like leaving numbers up and just like countering really, really fast. Like zero midfield presence. Speaking of Vanni Sartini, I think this is like his last game where he's still suspended from telling the refs last season that they were going to be found in the ditch. Jokingly, but just have to bring that up. He's still suspended. but anyway, his team's still playing his style. Zero midfield presence whatsoever. It's just like numbers by the ball and countering really fast. They get one really great chance on the break in the first half, which Damir Krylak scores against his former team. He's an RSL legend, and he gets back and scores one Frankie Lampard style against Soul Club following up. But Vancouver plays like that, and then they get exhausted. And when RSL realizes they shouldn't press the shit out of them, they should just, in fact, like chill the hell out a little bit, play in a little bit more of a mid-block, and then possess the ball when they have it, Vancouver gets exposed. And so, like, you can't, like, play, like, because the way Vancouver, it's like seven in the box and then like three hugging the midfield line almost. Like if you play 7-on-7 in your own box, like you're just going to get picked apart eventually, right? It's like not that dynamic. Like your players get tired of defending like that. The players up top get tired of running and like shit happens. And so Fidel Barajas, the Mexico youth national team player I was talking about earlier, slips a nice ball into Anderson Julio on like, it was like 2v7, but the whole Vancouver defense is like flat-footed and tired in the 70th minute. And Anderson Julio finishes. He's a quality finisher. Easy goal for them. Another one when, like, Brajas passes it backwards to the left back, Katranis, I think, was making his, like, second start for RSL. And he just, like, chips it from, like, a really weird angle, like Ronaldinho style almost, to the far post where it goes in. And that's kind of what it is. Vancouver just looks exhausted for the rest of the game. They missed some really weird chances on the break. And I know at least Ali Ahmed had one where he should have at least gotten a shot off and nothing really happened. I think this is kind of a symptom of how they play. And they're going to have some games like this where they don't adjust their opposition and they get kind of screwed. So, yeah, pretty comfortable win, I would say, at the end for RSL away from home, which is hard to do. And, yeah, I don't know.
We're moving on now to San Jose getting the first win of the season at home against Seattle. It's been a little bit of a rough start to the season for Seattle. I mean, they're obviously missing some names, but this was not a great game from them. I don't think they really deserve to be in this at 3-2. The DJ replacement ref is back. If you remember him from the first week in the Miami game, he's just a weird looking dude and he made some bad calls in this game. I do want to call out two Seattle players for two different reasons. I think Polo, their fullback, is very, very good. That is a fucking quality player. You hear his name all the time when you watch a Seattle game because he is just constantly defending really, really effectively. And then Danny Leyva started for Seattle in this game. And granted, I think most of that's coming from injuries and stuff, but like he was on loan to Colorado last season. And that guy's not very good. He's young, so like I'll give him some benefit of the doubt, but like he's not that good of a player. San Jose, they looked good in this game. They kind of looked back to like the quality that we know that they can have with certain players. Like Christian Espinoza obviously is a known quality of a player. They scored in the 41st and they scored in the 43rd. Espinoza scored the second one. So they had a really nice 2-0 lead going into halftime. Seattle had good possession, but weren't able to do much with it. And then in the second half, Seattle gets back into the game off of a horrific, horrific pen call. San Jose player defending in the box on like a corner just like pushes the back of the Seattle player and he just sprawls out and it's given as a penalty and it was so soft. Seattle converts, they're back on within one goal. Rui Diaz put that pen away on a Peñeca, and then in the 80th minute Seattle equalizes on a cross, and I don't feel like this is an earned them getting a point here. But then instant response within a minute, Jeremy Obobese, who comes on for Preston Judd, who I thought actually had a pretty good game for San Jose at striker. Obobese comes on, immediately fucking scores right after Seattle does. And San Jose battled for their first win of the season. It was a quality result for them. Let's move on now to Red Bull New York. 4-0 win against Inter Miami. Holy shit, Emily, what happened?
No Messi, no problem. The Barcelona boys could not do it in Harrison, New Jersey.
Wait, before we get into the game, can we talk about Emil Forsberg? Is that allowed? Can we be allowed to talk about Emil Forsberg on the podcast?
Yeah, let's talk about Emil Forsberg real quick while Emily figures out.
My man decided to move, to follow his dream, to move to Harrison, New Jersey. And you know what? He decided he was just going to ignore his wife and kids in the process. Because, you know, who was, like, you know, you move, it's your career move, right? You're going to go to Red Bull Arena, play under the bright lights, the packed crowds, just like the Bernabeu. You know,
leaving your wife and kids to move to Harrison, New Jersey is fucking crazy.
Well, and just like ignoring them, and like, you know that a year in advance, like you're taught. I'm sure they talked about it. I would hope, like, everyone knew this move was going to happen, and like
you
don't
think so,
and you don't bring them, and you don't call them. She said she talks to reporters more than she talks. He talks to her. That's crazy. Anyway, not to make this the gossip column, the Swedish gossip column, but congratulations on your 19 years of marriage, Emil Forsberg, gone.
I think what we've really learned from this game is that you know, Messi can't do it on a cold, windy night in Harrison, New Jersey, because he didn't play. Apparently Suarez looked fucking miserable during this game. I saw a tweet that his knees knew that it was going to rain 2 days before this game. Dean, do you have that power with multiple ACLs? Can you feel the weather come in before it does?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah? Absolutely. It's going to rain in about 2 days out here. I can feel it today. Fucking sucks.
You and Suarez are the same. Am I going to throw to Emily again? Should I throw to Emily again?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Cool. Can I tell you about this game? Yes, I can. So as we said, Messi was not there. The rest of his Spanish contingent were. They tried to possess, and Red Bull kind of sat back and let them to hit them on the counter. And that was probably wise considering the conditions of the game. And Lewis Morgan, hat trick in his return from injury. And Van Zier finally made himself, you know, he did something and actually assisted all of the goals. Where usually he's just missing his attempts on goal.
And being racist.
Did you see kind of the propaganda video?
He was like putting the coat around the kid. It's like, just give the kids coats so we don't have to do propaganda for Van Zier.
And the thing is, like, they didn't put the heads over it. They didn't put the hoods on them. So it was like, they weren't really keeping them dry.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Already a little late at this point. I don't know.
Pretty established win for New York to win 4-0 at home against Miami is a very, very impressive result. Let's move on now to Kansas City 2, LA Galaxy 3. Mateus, tell me about it.
Ooh, this Kansas City, so scouting report here, Kansas City can't score and LA Galaxy cannot defend whatsoever, especially cannot defend on corners because their goalkeeper, John McCarthy, cannot come out for and jump for the ball basically ever. Just not an aerial reach guy. Basically, just you're conceding that when you hire him as a goalkeeper for your team. So that's the LA Galaxy's kind of scouting report weakness there. Starting the game, Galaxy couldn't really possess the ball in midfield in transition, so they weren't going to go forward. Pansel, when he did receive the ball in the first half, was just kind of on an island. And like no one was really like following up with him, couldn't connect with Jovalich. I think he had like five touches in the first half. And SKC scored. They scored two from two corners, lo and behold. They had like a short corner routine where they just like played a looping ball over. And then Tomi gets a nice touch to Radoja, who has like a really easy finish from like 2 feet out. Beautiful early goal. And then Agata scores another one before the stroke of halftime to put KC up 2-0 going into halftime. And then they're still controlling the game. They have a really nice counter press working. LA Galaxy is like not really doing anything until the 61st minute when Gaston Brugman gets subbed on for Edwin Cerillo. Gaston Brugman's still a six. He's still defensively solid, but he's got a little bit more of a passing range than Edwin Cerillo, and that allows Ricky Puig to sneak in behind the Sporting Kansas City midfield line, right? So now he's in between the defensive midfield line, able to receive the ball, and that just changes everything for the last 30 minutes of the game. LA Galaxy get their first goal off like a really scrappy like corner off a transition where Eric Zavaleta pokes in the net. Fair enough. But then goals two, and then another one that was ruled offside where Puig, whatever his name is, slips in Hovelic, and it's like the defense is just like bamboozled. That like Ricky Puig is like now suddenly receiving the ball and running at them, and then the Sporting Kansas City defense does not know what to do. Jovelic has two beautiful finishes. One of them gets called back for offsides, but they're like identical runs of play where Jovelic is like running the left half space and just like shoots at Tamelia, and it's just kind of, it's easy. The whole game turns easy for them. SKC suddenly gets like scared of making an entry pass into the final third, like whatsoever. Now they're just like horseshoeing of death when they have the ball. And when they don't have the ball, it's LA Galaxy running full speed at them. So Zavaleta goal first, Jovelic goal second, and then finally in the 80th minute, there's a ball from gets to Gabriel Petch on the left wing of the field where he plays it across the face of goal. Tim Elia makes a really shitty attempt to save it, parries it straight into the path of Delgado, who just like pokes in the back of the net. Was called offsides bizarrely for a little bit until the VAR reversed it. I'm glad we don't have these replacement refs for a while because that was very much onside. But like a total fucking collapse from SKC at home against a good but not great LA Galaxy side. Like they didn't have to like shut up shop or start horseshoeing a death around the Galaxy defense. Like they're not like if Sporting Kansas City just continued to be aggressive throughout the last 30 minutes, they would have recovered from conceding that first goal. Instead of they completely fell apart. And it's not the first time this season. They've dropped 7 points from winning positions in like the first five games or four games even. Like it's not this Peter Vermees side cannot continue to do this and like be successful. They even make the playoffs like they did last season. I know they kind of scrapped their way in, but that's not like where they're trending this season. Especially this game without Johnny Russell, which is a big miss for them. Really, really disappointing for the SKC faithful. On the flip side, a really, really great win for LA Galaxy and proving that they can adjust to certain conditions. So credit to them.
I will say that I think through the beginning of the season that this LA Galaxy team is fucking legit. Like the Jovelic Gouge connection is really, really effective, and it's been really, really good so far to start the season. Let's move on now to Portland. Things are falling apart for Portland. We love that. They lost 1-3 to Philly. This was a weird one because I do think that Portland was actually the better team. They were like really, really good. Jonathan Rodriguez is playing his first game for the club after his transfer, I think $4 million from Club America. He looked good. He looked really, really good in his debut. But this is just a classic game of where one team controls it, has a lot of chances, doesn't put it away, and then pay the fucking price for it. And that's exactly what happened for Portland. Evander missed some sitters in like the first 20 minutes of this game. And then Julian Carranza made him pay. He breaks through in the 27th. Portland should have probably already been up 2-0 by this point. But they went down 1-0. Portland missed another chance. They had 72% possession. On the flip side, Yua, which is now how that's how you pronounce his name. I said last week I didn't know how to pronounce Yuri's name. It's Uwa. That's how you pronounce it. I've got it now. He could have had a hat trick. He did not score in this game for Philly. So there was a lot of chances on both sides. Quinn Sullivan scored in the 57th minute on a rebound, and then Carranza got a brace in the 67th. And then an 80th minute consolation goal for Jonathan Rodriguez on his debut. So I think that there are a lot of positives for Portland in this game because I do think that they played pretty well, and I don't think the scoreline truly reflects how they were because they just could not finish for the first 80 minutes of the game. They missed so many quality chances, and Philly made them pay. They're a quality team. They have players like Julian Carranza that can put the ball away. I'm very excited to watch Philly live this weekend. I'm going to see them play against Minnesota. That's going to be fun. But a very good game for them. Let's move on now.
I saw the post game where Phil Neville was saying the exact same things, and I believe Philly was down to like 14 or 15 players this weekend too. Like this should have been an opportunity where like the Timbers really should have gone out, put this one away, you know, outrun them, make some subs because Philly can't make any subs. Right. I think this is a pretty disappointing one. It's a pretty one hard one to take after some exciting wins to start the season for the Timbers, or exciting results anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move on now to St. Louis, D.C. Emily, tell me about it.
Yeah, this is a fun one. I think both teams, they want to play basically the same way, high pressing, really direct. So it's pretty back and forth for most of the game. D.C. was pretty shaky to start. I think St. Louis really could have scored a goal or two within the first 10 minutes. But they got on the board with a corner kick from Yarrow heading at home. And then D.C. basically immediately equalized after former St. Louis player Jared Stroud sent in a cross for Benteke, who his shot was saved from Berkey, who had a really good game. And then they were basically falling asleep back there because I was poked home and everyone was basically just watching Berkey make the save. and Stroud, he had a big game. He had the second assist, squaring it across goal for an easy strike for Benteke. He could have later killed the game, but was really casual in like a one-on-one with Berkey. So yeah, and then St. Louis equalized later on. They both had chances to win the game, but neither could, so it was a draw.
Fair enough. Fun one. Jared Stroud revenge game. We love a revenge game against your former team when you play well in a game like that. Mathis, the defending champs went on the road to Charlotte, and they lost 2-0. What happened?
This one is tough for a lot of reasons. So, you know, at first look, you look at the Columbus Crew roster, didn't lose a lot of people to international call-ups. They lost Schulte, but the rest of the roster is pretty much full strength. They did lose Nancy before the game. He was out with the flu, and he stayed in Columbus. So it's like, all right, bad vibes are starting to build. You're going away to Charlotte. They have a little bit of a crowd nowadays. Let's see what's going on, right? So Charlotte puts pressure on early, a few chances, and then Rudy Camacho, your only like a real deal center back, goes down. So they put on Derek Jones Jr. midfielder, slide Sean Zawadzki back. Fine. Then some bad vibes for Charlotte's ways. Charles the Jaguaray, I can't do Belgian names now. Their DP 10 signing has the worst miss I really think I've ever seen in any league ever. I mean, this is like an open goal. 95 XG, the goalkeeper gets fooled by like an entry ball in. He's across the ball and he just like steps on it. He doesn't even get a shot off. He just fucking steps on it. And then it gets cleared out and whatever. And then they actually score, but then Nagby flopped for a foul in the box and in his own box. And like they call the foul instead of allowing the goal to be scored, which is like fucking insane, by the way. So Charlotte should have scored earlier. Then they get another injury to Christian Ramirez, who like tears his hamstring. They put on Arfson. And then shortly thereafter, Derek Jones Jr. goes to trap a ball in the midfield and sort of turn, but he steps on Diani for Charlotte's ankles, just like in the process of like scooping the ball on the half turn. And then they go to VAR and they ruled out a red card. Now, like, I get that he stepped on his ankle, but like, this is very clearly like not even trying to foul, like turning away from pressure in the ball. And the guy like threw his leg in there to try and like poke the ball away. I don't see how that's ever, like, I can see it maybe being a foul just because you hurt a guy. That is, like, never a red card. So then Columbus is down a man already. They've already had to make two injury subs, and the vibes are just kind of off. They still get a goal before halftime on the counter, and then that gets called back for, like, a really ticky-tack offside. Like, it was a ball where it was, like, launched long to Mats Arfson, who was, like, checking back. And then he dribbles down the line and plays a cutback to Cucho, who like fires in the net in like the 50th minute, like 45th plus fifth of stoppage time in first half. And that gets called back. Then Charlotte gets a penalty that they sky. And so like the vibes are just fucked for this first half. It's 0-0 in the first half. The vibes are just fucked. Thankfully, the second half is a lot calmer until the 83rd minute when Ashley Westwood takes the ball down on his chest and then scores a half volley screamer. Gareth Southgate called him up. I don't know. You guys got to watch the replay of this goal because England could have used it this weekend against Brazil. Could have used something. It was a fucking banger from outside the box. And then they get another late goal with Aguimang hitting one to the near post on Evan Bush, the goalkeeper. But really just bizarre vibes for Columbus. This one's like just wasn't meant to be for them. Never really had a shot after like the second half, which is kind of like very, very quiet for their standards, even playing against 10 men. Yeah, kind of unfortunate all the way around for Columbus. Good for Charlotte, though, like starting a little resilience after missing a penalty, after losing Scott Arfield as well, went down with an injury. And then just the Ashley Westwood goal was really sick. And Dean Smith like has the team playing fairly well. So I have to give them some credit. It's not like they just kind of like, you know, stumbled upon this win. They did work for it a little bit against 10 men. But yeah, a good start overall, considering the expectations for Charlotte for the season. So happy to get points from Columbus anyway.
All right. Moving on to the last little thing where I talk about Colorado real quick, and then we'll wrap it up. I was at the game against Houston this weekend. That was the most nil-nil draw I've ever watched, and it's horseshit that we lost. Because I don't think we deserve to lose that game. I don't think we deserve to win that game, but we definitely didn't deserve to lose. Houston won on like a 95th minute dagger, which is just a heartbreaking thing to be in the stadium for. And it probably shouldn't have stood because one of Houston's players broke our center back's nose on the corner right before. That definitely should have stopped play. But because these scabs are scabbing, they didn't stop play and Houston scored from it. Where it's like, yeah, we probably could have defended the transition a little bit better if our center back wasn't on the ground bleeding out of his fucking nose. Like, I'm so glad that we don't have to talk about these goddamn scabs anymore. But holy shit, being at a game while your team loses in the 95th minute sucks ass. It was not fun. Do not recommend whatsoever. To be sitting there for the entire fucking game, and it's just boring as hell. Boring nil-nil. We wouldn't even talk about it if Houston didn't score this late goal. And then just get that fucking dagger. It's just like, oh man, what, I just have to go home now? What the fuck? So anyway, there's my Colorado rant. I still think we're going to be okay. I still think we're going to be an okay team this season. But like, holy shit, Jonathan Lewis cannot be one of the first men off the bench. Jonathan Lewis is a fucking bum. He's so bad.
U.S. men's national team player.
No, he's terrible. Please don't have him be the first fucking man off the bench. He's awful. I can't stand it anymore. Moises Mbido, I can't wait for you to be back with the team. We miss you. You're our best player. All right, that's all for us this week on the Soccer Edition. Hopefully this episode is okay, despite technical difficulties on all sides. Emily, thank you so much for joining. Mateus, thank you so much for joining. Thank you all for listening, and you all know what to say.
Peace out to the fucking scabs. Oh, my God.
I take my shirt off. Work all day. Hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah. Plantain, plantain.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug, but I ended up connecting to the world around me.
A world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.